Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of women and men who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. I'm Bridie, and in today's podcast, I'm speaking with Faye, who is calling from her home in Bedfordshire. Faye was diagnosed with breast cancer when she was 29. Faye has shared her story in blogs for our website and support app Becca, which she found helpful for finding her new normal after treatment. Today, we'll be chatting about her personal experience of breast cancer and how it impacted her confidence and intimacy with her partner. She'll also share some tips for reconnecting with your sexual self again after treatment. Faye, thank you so much for joining us today. I wondered if you could just start by telling us a little bit about your breast cancer diagnosis.
Absolutely. So in April 2018, which feels like years and years ago now, I was in Berlin for a work trip, and I was actually a cabin crew recruiter for an airline. So it's a very intense job, very physical, absolutely brilliant role, which I absolutely loved. And I was based in a hotel for 4 days. And on day two, I was having a shower after the event and thought, lovely, I have dinner, I'm relaxed, perfect. And I did a self-check like I have done for every single month since I was about 14. And I found a golf ball in my left boob. And I thought, what the hell is this? And I thought, I didn't notice that before because I'm not in the habit of really noticing that sort of thing, to be honest, in between. So I had a look in the mirror. I thought, hang on, this is really weird. What is this strange thing? So I had a bit more of a check. I noticed that the shape of my boob had changed. I noticed my nipple had inverted. So that was literally when it all kicked off. And I don't know how I did it, but I stayed there for the 4 day duration, even though I knew this was happening, which sounds nuts now I think about it. I stayed there for the 4 days because I realised how many people had made the effort to come to Germany for this event. So when I flew back, I had an emergency referral to the GP literally as soon as I landed. A week and a half later, I went to the breast screening clinic and sadly was there for 7 hours instead of the recommended 2.5.
Oh, wow.
And to be honest, in Germany, I knew it was cancer, which is another reason why I thought, oh, well, I might as well just ride it out and carry on with the event. And that literally was where it all started. So I was told the news. I chose to go on my own, even though I'd only told my husband and my manager where I was. Because I'm such a close family person, I've got a very small family, but I'm incredibly close to them. And I knew it was cancer before they told me, and I knew it would absolutely break their hearts. So that was the reason why I chose not to tell them. And the minute I had the news, I texted my husband because I was in such shock. I thought, I don't know what to do. I don't think I can ring him. I don't know what's happening. So I jumped in my car. Still don't really know how I did all this. Drove home, spoke to my husband. And the minute we landed, we literally went to see my family and told them exactly what was happening. And that literally was where it all started.
Oh, wow. That sounds like such a whirlwind. But you did say a couple of times that you sort of knew it was, you knew it was cancer. Was that just...
Yes.
Was it still a shock when you got the when you got the actual diagnosis? Was it still something you hadn't quite prepared yourself for?
Absolutely. Because the funny thing is, for that whole 7 hours, I thought, it's cancer, it's cancer, it's cancer. Oh, God, it's cancer. I knew it was. But when I was told the words, I'm really sorry to say you have breast cancer, I still thought, what? Which is really weird considering how I prepared myself. Yeah. And I thought, that doesn't make any sense at all. But the shock I felt to my core, that the weird thing is, I wasn't terrified that I had cancer. I didn't even think, oh my God, I'm going to die. My first reaction was, what am I going to tell my family?
Yeah.
Oh no, what do I do? Is that initial panic? Because I'm such a family girl, I just thought, this is going to break their hearts. How can I do this? And my second thought, which sounds probably ridiculous to somebody who perhaps hasn't had cancer in their lives through experiencing it themselves or a loved one, I thought, please don't make me lose my hair, because that was my thing, was my hair. And I literally thought, please don't take my hair away from me. And especially being 5'10" and pretty curvy, I'm quite a presence, if you like, because I'm not petite. I thought, oh, my hair balances me out, don't take it off me. And it sounds really funny looking back, it sounds vain, but actually I think once you lose your hair from something that's not your choice, you realize what a comfort blanket that is every single day, even if you have short hair, long hair, whatever style it is. And they were my initial worries. How weird. How weird.
Yeah, we do hear that a lot, though, especially about the hair, because it's something that's so associated with the image of a cancer patient, is someone who's, you know, having treatment and has lost their hair and is, you know, feeling quite rough. And that's sort of the first image that comes to people when they are diagnosed. So when you started approaching your treatment, was you quite worried? What treatment did you end up having, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, absolutely. I'm very much an open book with it. So I actually had the conversation about IVF immediately and fertility preservation, because I was 29. I didn't plan to have children just yet with my husband, but it's a conversation we had way before, which is another thing we bonded over. And they immediately gave me basically fertility preservation to take eggs away and to freeze them. Mm-hmm. Then literally a couple of days after that, I started 6 rounds of chemotherapy.
Oh, wow.
A couple of months after that, I had a double mastectomy and immediate reconstruction. And then I believe it was a month after that, in the October of 2018, I had radiotherapy. It's a bit of a full house, really, if you like.
Also so quickly.
It's a bit brutal.
Yeah, so quickly.
Absolutely. And it was such a whirlwind, absolutely. And every single day, like talking about the hair thing, every single day I was looking at my hair thinking, when's it going to grow? When's it going to grow? When's it going to grow? And I still, that was a massive thing in my head. I know I've talked about hair a lot in this conversation so far, but that was my thing. I couldn't get over it. Yeah. I just couldn't get over it, even though I'd had... essentially had my boobs removed, and I was like a teddy bear workshop. I'd been restuffed and I thought, what's going on? I don't really understand what's going on with my body. I put on 2 stone. I looked like Uncle Fester from the Addams Family when I looked in the mirror. And although now I think, oh, that's a funny thing to say, at the time I thought, I don't know who you are. And that was absolutely terrifying. I had no idea he was looking back at me.
Yeah, is that how you felt when treatment ended then, sort of just not really recognising the person? And were you sort of scared of how you could progress after going through that?
Absolutely. And I think for me, I didn't realise, and this again sounds quite naive, I didn't realise how much I actually deeply cared about my sexual identity. Because I'm not the sort of woman who talks about her sex life, anything like that, with friends or family. I've just never been built that way. I'm very private in that sense. So for me, I think when I lost parts of my body fundamentally, when I gained weight, when my joints hurt, when I was going through, I was forced into menopause, I thought to myself, I don't know who I am. I don't feel like a woman anymore. I feel like a giant baby almost, because I haven't got any hair and I have no feminine shape anymore. I just look like a blob. And it was just a very bizarre feeling. And after treatment, I came out of it feeling like, I'm going to be really happy when treatment ends. And if anything, I felt like the scene in a war film when all of the dust settles and it's like the storm's over. What do I do now? And I had no idea what to do. It was really weird.
Yeah.
Really weird.
Did you find there was any support, especially for those conversations and questions you had about sex and intimacy? Was there anyone who you could talk to, or did you feel you could talk to your partner about it at all?
Absolutely. Well, it's something that was uncharted waters for us, because we've always had a laugh talking about like sex, intimacy, everything like that. We have quite a jokey relationship, even though we're so close. And it was just a really weird experience, the whole thing, if I'm completely honest. Yeah. I just thought, I don't know what to do. How do I talk to him about this? We've never talked about this before. And I was really frightened and nervous, thinking, what if he's not attracted to me anymore? I look completely different. I'm not the woman he married. I'm not the woman he chose. And after umming and ahhing, probably for a couple of months, not wanting to talk about it because I was so frightened of the answer, I had a look at the Becca app. That was actually a massive resource for me. Reading the blogs that were in there, reading the information, realizing I wasn't on my own. So I did that in 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when I was having a mad hot flush and I didn't know what to do with myself. So my go-to was reading the app and literally researching all I could. And that gave me a lot of strength to just have that conversation and rip the plaster off with my husband. And literally 2 minutes into the conversation, I thought, what on earth was I scared to talk to him about? That's ridiculous. Because he was so funny, so sweet and so kind. He literally just said, why are you worried? You're going through treatment and I love you. Don't worry about it. I'm too tired anyway from looking after you and working. Oh, so, you know, we both get away with it, which is great. But I was incredibly lucky, and I count myself lucky, because I appreciate not everybody's in that position to have that immediate support from their partner. But he was phenomenal and a massive rock for me throughout the whole process. And that's probably the best thing I ever did, was talking about it and just braving something I felt really awkward about.
Yeah, that sounds really open, and it sounds like a really open, honest conversation that you were able to have. And it's brilliant that Becca helped you feel you reached that point. Is it something from that moment, did you feel that you were able to start sort of addressing and navigating your worries and concerns about intimacy? Did it take a long time? Was it a process that you worked on together? How did you sort of get back to that stage of feeling like you could be intimate again?
It was a long road, I have to say. And I had a real crisis of confidence physically, because I just looked at, as I say, I looked at myself and thought, I don't know what that is. I can't even identify what I am anymore. And it's something I found very difficult to cope with and very difficult to start to process. But by talking about it, I kept talking about it. And that was probably the key to the success of getting to where I feel now. I kept talking about it. I kept the conversation alive. So I thought, actually, I feel a little bit different this month. I don't feel quite so bad in this respect. So I'm going to talk about it, and we're going to feel better about things. And the next month, I'd feel rubbish again about something. And if I hadn't spoken to him about it so openly, I don't think I would be able to talk about it as openly with you as I am now, to be quite honest.
Are you openly sort of talking to other people about it, or your friends, or your people you go see at the hospital and things like that? Was it something that you felt you sort of had to talk about, or did you want to keep it quite private? Because it can feel quite taboo, I think, but it is something that happens a lot. Yeah, after treatment, people feel real effect to sex and intimacy in their lives, and sometimes don't feel they have the way to talk about it with other people.
And it's really awkward. Like, even now I'm thinking, oh my God, how am I even talking about it? It's a typical Brit. I'm like, oh, jolly hockey sticks, carry on. Don't talk about sex and intimacy, because it's really weird. And part of me still feels that. I can't help that. I've got that sort of very classic mindset of, it's very private, I don't talk about it or share it. But that's why I challenged myself to actually be open with you guys, and to be open through the work I've done so far, because I thought that's a good challenge for me to actually stretch myself and to push the limits of what I can do, because I believe I can do it. I've just got to walk the walk. And when I was in hospital, it didn't come up a lot, actually, to be honest. I mean, if I'm honest, I was the youngest person there, so people just didn't talk about that kind of thing at the time, which made me feel a bit more isolated and a bit lonely, because I thought, I kind of want to talk about it, but it's a bit weird if I do. And I am fortunate that my cancer nurse was wonderful. She actually broached the subject with me without me inviting her to. And shout out to Debbie, you're amazing. I hope she listens to this in the future. She is literally an angel. And she just said, you do realize you can talk to a counselor who specializes in this. If you want it, we'll be there like a shot. If you don't, there's no pressure. And again, I'm conscious that's not everybody's experience, but I hope this podcast will encourage people to feel confident to talk to their care nurses if they're not mentioning it. Because that service is out there, and it's actually really powerful. And although I didn't uptake it at the time, it was there. And I think that was a massive blanket around me to know that I had somebody to support me if I needed it.
Yeah. Thinking of people who are listening to this podcast who might be struggling with their confidence around intimacy after breast cancer, or are worried about having that initial conversation with their partner, is there any tips or suggestions that you would give them on what they could do, or what you wish you had done quicker, if that makes sense?
Absolutely. Do not suffer in silence, because that couple of months where I did was hell on top of a living hell of going through cancer and treatment. It was bad enough as it was, and I actually made my own life harder without realizing by staying silent about it. So it doesn't matter whether you talk to your partner, whether it's a loved one, a colleague, your cancer nurse, a counselor, it doesn't matter who it is, whoever you have a connection with where you feel comfortable to have that openness, I urge you to do it, because it makes a huge difference. And I can honestly say that my worries about it halved overnight. And the funny thing is, my husband actually thought about it too, but he didn't want to sort of bridge the subject with me to make me nervous and to make me feel pressured and to make me feel worried. So the fact that we talked about it, it was way less awkward. And also, I guess a kind of a learning I have from the whole part of that experience is, do whatever you need to do to feel like the best version of yourself that you are. And it probably sounds like a funny statement, but for me, it was my war paint. Even at home, I thought, I'm putting false eyelashes on. I'm wearing that lovely eyeshadow from Charlotte Tilbury that I've never worn and I've had in a cupboard. I am wearing it and I'm putting that war paint on and doing my brave heart and going in there head first. And it made me feel better. And just do whatever you need to do to feel like the best version of yourself, because you do deserve it and you're worth it.
That is, I mean, amazing advice. I feel quite empowered right now from hearing that. So, exactly. Just to go back to something you've talked about earlier at the beginning, you spoke a lot about your hair loss and how you felt when so worried about it coming back and growing back. How do you feel about it now? Because as we've had in this discussion, appearance and how you feel about yourself feeds so much into sex and intimacy and feeling comfortable with, you know, having, you know, going back into having sex and being intimate with your partner. How do you feel now about your general, do you feel like you've been able to come past the worries you had about your hair growth and things like that?
It's been a long journey that definitely isn't over. And that's the important thing to note, is that it's going to be a long time before I'm close to where I feel my best and my most confident. But you know what? I think for me, I tried to have a positive mindset. So when I lost my hair, I literally just thought, I didn't realise what my head shape was like. That's quite interesting. I can, I look like my dad. This is interesting. And everyone said I look like my dad. And I thought, I think that's a compliment. Thank you, Dad. You're very handsome. So for me, I just did everything I could to research what was going to help my hair grow back as quickly as possible. And luckily, that's worked really well for me, using the right products that suit me. So my hair has come back like wildfire all of a sudden, which is amazing. And it's been a very emotional journey, especially that for me has been a big, big deal. But it has changed how I feel about how I approach Steve as well, actually, because for me, that was part of my femininity, having this long flowing hair. And he's never known me with anything but that. So that was a massive, you know, kick for me, losing that. And I think now I finally feel more of a woman again, because I'm starting to look a bit softer and not quite so severe as I felt before. And even I think physically, I've never been a boob person, if I'm honest. I've never been overly fussed. I've never ever sort of like had them out on a night out. I've never been overly enamored with them, but I didn't realize how much I loved them until I lost them, which is a really weird feeling that I never thought I'd say. And it's taken over a year for them to remotely feel like part of my body. And I'm actually proud of them now. I actually feel like they're my little girls. And I've named them after my surgeons. I had two lovely ladies that gave them to me. And I've named them after them as well. So I've kind of tried to attach some sentiment and some humour to it. And there are some days, don't get me wrong, there are some days where I actually do just burst into tears, or I just sit there thinking, what is this general region that is my body? What is going on? And it's a horrible feeling. It's a very lonely feeling. But I think for me, talking about how I'm feeling with other people, I mean, it tends to be my nearest and dearest, but talking to others, I think also practicing more self-love as well, I think has been a massive deal breaker for me, because I've notoriously never been 100% kind to myself. I really try hard to be kind to others because I really believe in it. But I've always been a bit self-destructive, where I don't give myself time to preserve my energy. And I think cancer is the most horrendous thing we as a family have ever gone through. And I hope, it, touch wood, it never happens to any of us again. But it's actually taught me a hell of a lot. And it's made me slow down, celebrate successes, to put losses and sadness in its place and to manage it the best I can, and to love every day for what it is. I feel so lucky to be here, and so lucky to have a head of hair, actually, because I'll be honest, there's one stage where I thought, I'm going to look like a cartoon character for the rest of my life. I look like that Gru guy off Despicable Me.
Oh, the Minions,
The Minions, yeah. That's the one. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to look like him for the rest of my life. Not the hottest look for me, but it's been a real journey, and I implore everybody to talk about it, to be kind to yourself, and to tell your closest network how you're feeling, because you will be so surprised how much they can help you with their kind words or just sitting with you and listening. So please don't bottle it up. Make sure you talk about it and broach that subject, even if it feels a little bit awkward.
Oh, that's such good advice, Faye. Really lovely to hear. Just as a final point, I feel like you might end up repeating yourself slightly. At the beginning of the podcast, you mentioned that it felt so long ago that you were diagnosed with breast cancer now. But if there was something that you could say to Faye at that moment before she received it, or when she had just received her diagnosis, is there any pieces of advice that you'd give her for what she was about to face or what she would face after her treatment?
Absolutely. And I think there's probably two sections of advice I'd give in those sort of circumstances. And I think if you're on the brink of diagnosis and you find out the news that you've been dreading, you can do it. And I think that's what I wish I'd told myself sooner. I survived through it and I did my best, but I wish I'd reassured myself a little bit more, because I was really disappointed in my body for letting me down, and most of all my femininity let me down. But what I'm now really proud of is that same body overcame what hurt me, which is a really weird thing to say. I grieved a body that I used to have, that I was angry at, and now I'm incredibly proud of this woman that I've become that's managed to fight it. So I think if you're going through the early stages or diagnosis, please be a bit easier on yourself. If you need to have however long resting, do it. If you want a hot chocolate, have it. If you want to read the most rubbish magazine that everyone else thinks is absolute toilet, you read it. You do whatever you have to do to feel a little bit better in those moments where you're going to feel lonely. And I've banged on about talking to people. Not everybody is a talker, and I absolutely understand it. My husband's not a massive talker, and that's probably why we go together so well, because I rabbit on and he listens. But you know what? Do whatever you need to do to share the load a little bit as well. And I think that's so important. It doesn't matter if you talk to yourself. I talk to myself all the time to give myself a pep talk when I'm struggling. Make sure you do that. And I think when you've got over your active, not got over, that's the wrong term. You're never over it. I'm not over it now. And I kind of am holding on to that on purpose so I never forget. But when you are past your active treatment and you're going through post-treatment of cancer, which I'm going through hormone therapy, which is horrible with the menopause, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. Again, it's the self-care and the kindness piece that is so important. If you can't do something, say no and own it. It's a fabulous feeling once you turn a corner and you feel like, nope, sorry, I'm not up for it today. I can't do this. Nope, sorry, I'm not feeling like that. I'm going to protect my energy. It doesn't matter what people say, and you will probably disappoint some people, because like me, I was a yes woman where I'd say yes to everything and burn out before cancer. I'm actually much more comfortable with saying, I just can't do that right now and I'm sorry, but I'm also not sorry. I'm protecting myself. I'm really protecting that battery inside me from draining. And you know what? If I do that, I can give more back to you when I feel a bit better. And that's what it is. It's kind of like a positive cycle rather than a vicious cycle. It's very much a case of, I can give more to the people I love and the things I love and my life in general. I can give you more value and nourishment if you let me have this time to myself. And I think throughout the whole cancer journey and beyond, that's what I would urge everybody to do. Just listen to yourself and don't feel guilty for feeling as you do, because it's absolutely fine and it's absolutely natural.
I think the main themes of this have been like communication and honesty, and that's a brilliant way to end the podcast. So thank you so much for talking with me today, Faye. Really appreciate it, and it was wonderful to hear your story.
Thank you for having me.
You can find personal stories like Faye's, plus hints and tips for managing life after breast cancer, in our free support app, Becca. Becca is free to download on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.